VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
I'm Gabriel Marcotti. It's the FA Cup third round weekend. Joining us on the panel today, we have Rory K. Smith, Alison Rudd, and Tony Cascarino. Coming up, we'll be talking all things FA Cup. And we're going to start with Oxford and Swansea. Magic of the Cup, team in Premier League that presumably, safe to say, preoccupied with avoiding relegation, but still puts out a strong side. Alison, when you were a little girl, I'm assuming that nobody ever talked about, well, so Nottingham Forest put out a strong side in the FA Cup, because it was just kind of assumed that you would because you wanted to win the competition, right?
Yes, that is correct, Gab.
Right. Times have changed. Now it's part of our lexicon.
I want Swansea to win the FA Cup this year, so I'm stuck.
Why? They're not even English.
Because they scored the best FA Cup goal I've ever seen. Did you see it? It was beautiful. Montero's goal. Mm. It was just gorgeous.
Oh, what goal, yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Okay, I don't know if it was the best FA Cup goal I've ever seen.
I think so, because we assume they have to be from 40 yards in the mud, and I think that's old-fashioned. Let's go for modern, beautiful FA Cup goals. I thought it was really gorgeous, and the sort of goal that ought to launch Swansea out of their dire straits and into something miraculous and moving, and it didn't work. So I don't like the narrative of this year's FA Cup. It's not working.
Cass, stuff like this, I realise, obviously, when you played, the FA Cup was more... Mm. You know, it was more important because you had the white horse and everything. that is a mean reference to the final from what year?
1923.
There you go. That's when Wembley was so full and there was a policeman on the white horse and he single-handedly kept.
Who were the two teams?
Bolton and Blackpool.
Very good. No, I was gonna get to if you're. If you're on a struggling team, and you've been on struggling teams, does getting knocked out of a cup competition, does that create a disappointment that then sticks with you? Or do you actually look at it, all right, we have more time to train? Especially because in your days, people would have like 17 replays.
I think if you look at the clubs, and the two clubs that had problems with their fans, Villa and Swansea, a certain incidents happen, that tells you the importance for the club because they're struggling clubs. You need to get victories for just the... preparing for training and going in and the atmosphere around the camp. And I think the cup's important for teams, especially when they're struggling, and just selecting a side. I mean, Swansea did, to be fair, they did select a very strong side, but it carries a lot of weight.
There's two things, aren't there? There's one is that you can't separate momentum by competition, so it's not like if you lose a game in any competition, it affects your team psychology without question.
No.
And also, but then there's the element of we kind of talk ourselves into the cup not mattering, which is a bit strange. I was at Spurs yesterday, I think 15 changes between them. Two teams who've obviously got other things to think about than the cup, but then as soon as Spurs look like they might go out, Pochettino threw on Kane and Dele Alli, which is as if to say, oh, hang on, actually, we don't want to lose this game. So I think the cup doesn't matter until it starts to matter, basically.
It was an altercation between Jonjo Shelvey and a supporter. We're going to discuss Villa later in Alisson's big story, but anybody... want to fill us in on what happened?
Did Shelvey not offer out a fan in the car park? Mm. One of the many car parks around the Kassam Stadium, which has ample parking.
Well, that's what I want to get to. You must
what,
have felt...
the parking?
No, I was going to refer to the ex-pro who's here, who might at some point have been insulted by a fan and offered him out.
I've had a few times at a few clubs and a few incidents, yeah. I mean, there was a great guy at Chelsea. I used to, when I was on the sub, his seat was right behind the dugout. And if I got up just to get up and what, he'd go, oh, no, sit down. What are you getting up for? No. And he literally would go into all, you know, all these reasons why I shouldn't go on. And it went on for quite a while. And then one day I've just looked round him. I said, do us a favour. Just give me one little bit of slack. And he then gave me the thumb, like to sort of thumbs up. And he never, ever said anything. But I went through, probably 3 to 4 months of him just abusing me. And I hadn't even kicked a ball. And the team would be losing. And I'd be like, he's just, as soon as I got to the stage, as soon as I got off the seat, his voice would start.
It wasn't because your rear end was blocking his view of Peter Nicholas.
No, it's because I wasn't having a great time. And when you don't play well, you get stick. And
okay, but this is kind of funny. Like, but you never had a situation where somebody was really insulting you, having a go at you, and you felt like, all right, you know what? You know, you lost your cool.
No, I never.
And you felt like. No. You've seen it happen, though.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Tell us stories, Uncle Cass.
Well, there was a boy.
Preferably ones involving Roy Keane, the most famous player you ever played with.
A boy at Marseille got attacked in a car, and he got out of his car. Mark Libra, you know, I think I mentioned before. The fans were giving him a lot of stick, and he got out of the car and confronted a fan, and it weren't just one fan, it ended up being a number of them, and became a very serious incident at the time. I think you only answer, and I said this to Alison last night when we were chatting, and I said, you know, you only answer players' performances by what you do on the pitch. You know, as a player, your fans, you have to ignore it. You have to get on with it and don't get involved with them, because you are only going to come off second best whatever happens, even if you won the fight.
Yeah, it is kind of a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, as I was saying to Tony last night, I think...
We should point
out
that Alison and Tony have recently moved in together.
I think there's this massive, stupid, artificial gulf between footballers as superstars and the fans. And I think it is possible to talk to a fan and for it not to be the wrong thing to do. And we disagree, Tony. I think if you're the captain, things are going badly wrong. Mm. And a fan, because you're at it's an FA Cup game, it's a smaller ground, the access is easier.
Yeah.
And you can hear what they're saying, and they can touch you.
Yeah,
to pretend it's not happening. To go all aloof, I've paid a lot of money and I can't talk to you. I don't think that's necessarily... I agree, show it on the pitch is your first priority.
No, well,
I think it's wrong to integrate.
I would say one thing to that. I would be much more happier if you... And I'm bringing back my Club Marseille happening, because fans came to the training ground sometimes and they had their speak... I think it would have been great if Richard said, Mika Richard said to the fan, identify that fan, tell him to come to the training ground and see us. Come and, you know, add some fans in. Not for a fight, to talk.
I'm putting my fan hat back on, and I totally get what you're saying. But I like the idea. Like, identify that fan and bring him to me and have him come to my training ground.
It's not,
and I'll make him wait outside and then I'll let him into my boudoir. No, what the hell? Listen, look.
But
what I am saying is, every country has its footballing culture, and with good reason. I think in England there's a situation where there's a greater distance than there once was. In a situation like this, in certain countries, in certain clubs, I'm not saying it's right. In some ways, often it's wrong. Mm. But, you know, for example, at Roma, after every game, especially after every defeat, they all have to march down and so that they can get yelled at by the ultras. In other clubs, you know, it's normal for 2 or 3 senior players will face a delegation of supporters. Now, if it just, you know, descends into people shouting at each other, it's probably not constructive. Other times it can be. But we're going to get into this more when we discuss Villa. I want to go back to an excellent story Rory wrote last week about a guy who, because I don't follow the lower leagues, I had no idea. I don't even know if it was the same guy or just a dude with the same last name. Michael Appleton. Now, for those who don't know, Michael Appleton was a standout youngster at Manchester United who then got injured. Then he did his coaching badges. And then he went to West Brom, and he was thought to be the future. He went to other clubs where it didn't work out, including, I think, Blackburn.
Portsmouth, Blackpool and Blackburn, which is a CV that is just a list of 3 of English football's great basket cases. And then because he was associated with them, he had those 3 jobs in 15 months, he kind of got written off. It was assumed that he had in some way...
Did he keep getting sacked or did he just walk out?
No, he walked out on 2 and he got sacked by Blackburn after 67 days. I think it was when Blackburn sacked Henningberg after 3 months, then Appleton after 3 months. And... I think, having spoken to him about it, I think that he made poor choices, and I think he was slightly naive in terms of... I think I understand what happened at Portsmouth. He says he was presented with a plan, and then obviously they got done for money laundering. That changed everything. He went to Blackpool. If you don't do your due diligence on the Oystons, then you deserve what's coming to you, which is being sacked. And then he went to Blackburn because they just sacked Henningberg, and he thought they couldn't do it again, which is not... a good reason for taking a job. But he got unfairly tarnished. He was this incredibly kind of, supposed to be this incredibly bright young coach. He takes these three jobs, they are all disasters, and he is tarnished by his association. And he's had to drop down to League Two, to Oxford, to start rebuilding his reputation. And I went to see him in Oxford in December. And it's what they're doing is really interesting. And you tweeted about their use of stats and the way they're using stats, which I maybe didn't convey quite well enough, or it could just be that they're using them in an incorrect way. That's possible. But
it could be the third option is that
they didn't tell me the truth.
They didn't tell you the truth because people who, you know, from, I mean, you've obviously written a book on analytics together with Chris Anderson, that if you have the really good stuff,
you hold it back.
You go there. You don't go. You don't go telling the first Rory K. Smith that walks into your door.
I am very persuasive, but the I don't think so. I met the analyst Dan Bond, and he walked me through a lot of the stuff they use. I'm sure there were things that they didn't show me that they want to keep secret. But no, I think they're doing a lot of interesting stuff. My view on analytics is that using them at all is relatively forward-thinking, especially in the lower leagues, that there is as yet no right way of using them. They spent $200,000 on the pitch and then narrowed it, which is totally counterintuitive for a footballing side, because Appleton felt that the fullbacks were too exposed to diagonals and they couldn't close the ball down quickly enough, so they narrowed their home pitch.
But didn't you say in your piece they narrowed it because the players were intimidated by it?
No, the players were intimidated by it out of possession. So they enjoyed the space when they had the ball, but when they were out of possession, they felt they were more vulnerable to long diagonals, of which there are many in League Two. It wasn't a great FA Cup draw. There weren't that many games that had that sort of cup magic feeling to them.
Apart from Eastleigh, of course.
But even that, it was Bolton, who were struggling massively and haven't been paid since last year. So two of the teams that were on TV, Oxford and Exeter, are great adverts for the fact that the lower leagues, League 1 and League 2, and Cass watches loads of League 2, are a much more diverse environment than they're given credit for. But you look at, so Northampton have been doing well, who are managed by Chris Wilder, who used to manage Oxford.
Yeah.
Now, Chris Wilder is a great story, but he's a relatively typical League 2 manager. It's discipline, it's hard work, it's hard running. And then you have Appleton and Tisdale, Exeter 16th, I think, aren't they? But, you know, there are different ways in League 2 of achieving success. And I think one of the things that FA Cup Third Round Weekend does really well is just occasionally highlight that lower down, away from the limelight, there are interesting things happening. Mm. Not just interesting sort of personal stories of triumph and redemption, but there are actually people doing things that are a bit different.
That's why I think I enjoyed reading your story, is that to me...
Whether you agree with them or not.
No, but to me there aren't enough stories like that. To me, the narratives, like I said, always refer back to what the guy was like as a player and, you know, and moving on from League Two to the polar opposite, to the Theatre of Dreams, Manchester United and Sheffield United. Now, United go through, it's a late penalty, it's an absolutely idiotic tackle.
It was bizarre,
in the box,
wasn't it?
But who was the guy who made the tackle?
Dean Hammond.
Is he a former...
Leicester. He's a sort of championship
stalwart,
isn't
he? Really? Yeah, a bit of a journeyman player,
What? But really experienced.
Yeah.
Anybody have any idea what brain fart or something?
You have lack of oxygen to your brain by the 94th minute.
I don't... We've talked United to death. Somebody maybe... There's obviously that wonderful statistic from their past 10 home games. They haven't scored a first-half goal. Although they've only conceded one first-half goal at home, so I guess that is something to cheer about. James Ducker absolutely put the boot into them in his match report, which I'm sure you've all read. Anybody have anything new to say about Manchester United? I am really at a loss because it's the same thing. Paul Scholes goes on television and savages them.
I have something to say about the Paul Scholes thing. Okay. Here is what I want to say about the Paul Scholes
thing. Please give us some background on the Paul Scholes thing first, for people who don't live in the Paul Scholes world.
Born in Oldham Paul Scholes, obviously, United legend, has been criticising Van Gaal for, on his, either in his column in the Independent, which I think has now been discontinued, for, what, a year at least? You can rely, some pundits, people like Gary Neville are really, really good, they can talk really well about any number of subjects. Cass, for example, Danny Higginbotham, I think, is excellent. Other pundits tend to be very strong on the clubs with which they are associated. And Scholes is very good on United, but you see him on BT when he's doing a game that's not got Manchester United involved in it, and you see he's kind of at a loss, Scholes. But he's
maybe
very
just
good.
He's a bit bored
and very
United.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit tunnel-visioned with it. He's very strong on Van Gaal. He really doesn't like Van Gaal. I think he called him boring this weekend and said that the style of football, it doesn't suit the club's tradition. And all the newspapers, obviously, as they always do, picked up on it. Scholes blast at Van Gaal, blah, blah, blah. Despite the fact that he has been doing that and saying that for a year, it's ad nauseam.
It's kind of like when newspapers write whole stories based on Gary Lineker's tweets.
So, well, exactly, yeah. So, but what I think is really interesting, one of his close friends is Ryan Giggs. He's very close with the rest of the class of 92. And obviously he was a player for, and a coach, in fact, for Sir Alex Ferguson for a long time. At a club like Manchester United, there is no way that someone powerful, be it an assistant manager or a director or an ambassador, if they wanted to, couldn't ring Paul Scholes and say, Paul, this isn't helping, please stop.
I like this argument. Do we actually know how close they are, Giggs and Scholes? I mean, are they actually mates who like sit and chat and hang out together, or is it the kind of thing they were just teammates, they've known each other for a very long time, there's a deep respect
I think somewhere in between the two.
They're not having sleepovers.
One thing, and I'm glad you've touched on this, because one thing that's has bothered me for about 2 or 3 months, Ryan Giggs at the club, I can't understand why he has not walked out at United. Because of the way they play, which is obviously what loads of people have documented, and the fact that I can't believe he wants to be part of that.
Maybe he buys into the process. I mean, I can't see it, Gab.
I can't see how he can. It's everything that's an antidote to what they were before.
I'll say this about Louis van Gaal is I've had a chance to spend some time with him twice, both a long time ago when his star was a bit different. When the guy, if you like talking about football, when the guy gets going, he is pretty spellbinding in the right context and stuff. Can we just rule out that Giggs hasn't bought into the process and Giggs doesn't actually believe that it works, or that Giggs feels a commitment to his contract?
I think you can probably assume that Giggs, who is an intelligent bloke, I wonder whether Giggs feels that even if he doesn't like what he's seen in terms of the kind of output on the pitch, whether Giggs feels that Van Gaal has something to teach him about management. But you also, on the sort of flip side, wonder whether Giggs has decided that it's better to be inside for when it all goes pear-shaped and he can just take the job on. You wonder whether he's playing the long game.
Okay, but all right, well then, since we're in that realm of possibility and that Giggs is waving around for Van Gaal to be sacked or to see out his contract, show of hands, who in this room, assuming United finish fourth this year and fourth next year, would say, all right, Van Gaal's gone, let's give Giggs a proper grown-up contract?
I think if Manchester United...
Nobody's raised their hand.
I don't understand the question. Were we pretending to be...
Woody.
Oh, okay.
Assuming he still has a job, too.
Yeah.
You know, assuming United don't go and win Champions Leagues and league titles in Van Gaal's final 16 months, what would convince you that you should appoint Ryan Giggs?
If I had any power at United at all, I wouldn't... If it carries on this way with Van Gaal and Van Gaal walks out, or whatever the solution is... I wouldn't immediately promote Giggs. It's kind of weird that he's got to go away. He's got to learn how to be his own manager. He has to learn, because he's so in the shadow at the moment. And I don't know if he's aware, but it actually looks slightly embarrassing. Seeing him not being himself, it's odd, sat quietly there.
That's one of the things, when people make an analogy with, like, you know, Pep Guardiola and people like that who moved up. Pep Guardiola, at the end of his Barcelona career as a player, left, and he played in Italy, he played in Qatar, which is neither here nor there, but he played in Mexico specifically because he wanted to play for Juan Malillo, who was a manager who he really admired. He went and he did things, he experienced different kinds of football. These guys who've been at United since they were 5 years old, you know, this, and almost all of it with the same manager.
Exactly. If it makes Paul Scholes a limited pundit, it has to make Ryan Giggs a limited manager, does it not, Rory?
Yes, which might explain why the other guy went to Spain.
Yes, although he's not doing very well.
Yeah, so far. Anybody want to say anything about Sheffield United? The Blades? Managed by
Nigel Adkins,
the guy who used to be the Reading manager? No.
Yeah.
Managed the other one. Yeah.
Southampton, yeah. Reading, Scunthorpe.
Yeah.
I didn't...
He's a former physio, if I'm not mistaken.
He is a former physio.
All right.
I didn't know that Sheffield United had changed their badge.
Is it no longer Blades?
It looked like the Isle of Man badge. I'd like it if someone got in touch with Gab to explain why that's happened.
I don't know. I saw a car parked down the street, which had that funny Isle, which I'd never seen before. It had the Isle of Man license plate.
Yeah.
Weird symbol, which I thought it was something Masonic. And
have you been to the Isle of Man, Gab?
I have not.
Would you like to go?
No.
I'd like to know if we have any listeners in the Isle of Man. That would be fascinating.
I have very little interest. I think I've already seen enough of this country. You know, one place I'm curious
You've
about...
You've never been north of Watford?
I have. I've been to Leeds. We've been through
this.
Did you
just say, I've had enough of this country?
You did.
No. I visited. I've been here a long time. I visited the bits. The only bit I haven't visited.
What bits have you visited?
What
bits have you visited outside the Empire?
Gillingham? Have you been to Gillingham?
Don't ruin it for me.
You said you've everywhere, but
I've been to Liverpool. I've been to Bath. I've been to Leeds.
Have you been to Bristol?
I've even been to Harrogate.
Been to Harrogate?
Yes.
Have you been to Exeter? Exeter Cathedral.
Exeter's really far away. But no,
Cornwall's lovely though, isn't it? Cornwall and Devon are lovely.
I've been to Cornwall. I've been to Devon. I've been to Lizard. But you know what?
The Lizard.
Whatever. No, the only place I haven't been that I'm curious about, simply because it seems to be like, you know when you watch BBC Breakfast News, they have a map.
With Ollie Kay's brother.
With Ollie Kay's brother, that's right. They always have a... I don't know on what basis they do this, but it'll say like London, Birmingham. They have like certain select cities on the map. And one of them is Kendal.
Yeah.
And I was thinking like, and it's weird because like Liverpool's not there, but I'm like, Kendal, what the hell's Kendal?
Right?
It's politically correct.
Yeah, obviously I found out what Kendal's like. I can go on Wikipedia too, right?
Have you had Kendal mint cake?
Well, that's the thing. Then I found a Kendal mint cake. I found a Kendal near Carlisle.
Not in Liverpool.
It's probably an association with Howard Kendal.
Possibly too confusing.
To not offend anyone.
But there's a whole little corner
of the country which seems to generally be empty apart from...
You mean the Lake District and Cumbria?
Cumbria, I mean. And which is sort of on the way to Glasgow. I am a little bit interested by that. All right. Sheffield United, League One, this might be the only... I don't want to disrespect them, but I don't know much about them. I don't follow League One.
They did okay, they played well in this game,
but is there any broader point to make about Nigel Atkins, who used to be a physio?
No, he used to be at West Ham. Southampton. I don't think there is a broader point. I think the most interesting thing about Sheffield United was that they did defend well, but they didn't need to defend that well because United were terrible.
Right. Memphis Depay coming on at the end. Excite you? No? Van Gaal complaining that Sheffield United defended with 11 men behind the ball, and so you have to play with two wingers if they do that. Logical question, why didn't you start Depay and Martial so you'd have two fast wingers? No? We just chuck all that up to...
I don't think it matters whether they play two wingers, five up front. Does it matter if one... I think any organised system he puts together isn't showing any way of adventure. Even if you put them there.
I just want to know, you know, at the end of a game at Old Trafford, he walks down the steps, Van Gaal. Are those people paid to shake his hand? It makes it look like he's...
Il Duce.
Everyone loves me and I'll do a little wave when I leave and no one is cross with me. It's all very staged.
I actually met one of these guys.
One of the fans?
Oh. Yeah, the ones who sit right behind the bench. Okay. Like, if you go back and you look at pictures of Sir Alex, there's like four or five Sikh guys who are big United fans who sit behind him. And I met them once in Manchester. I don't see... Those aren't the guys who shake Van Gaal's hand. I don't know if, like, when he leaves the pitch... I don't know what happened to them, if they've been removed or they just choose to turn their backs on Louis. Or if they're not fans. But I don't see them anymore.
Well, it could be anything. They could have had their tickets moved somewhere else. They could have... decided that the football's inordinately boring, so they don't want to watch it.
Could be. In our debate this week, we're going to go off the back of Alison's excellent story about the Aston Villa team bus being stuck. There's wonderful video of this as well. When I saw this, and I saw somebody tweeted it, I thought, wow, this is going to be really bad. Instead, from what I could tell from the video and from the guy's Brummy accent, it's a guy standing in front of the bus, and one by one, as the players come on, he basically says, like, Verichut, you're not very good at playing football. Guzan, you're not very good at playing football. Agbon Lahore, you're not... It's kind of repetitive. It didn't really strike me as, like... But there was stuff that went on, which was more apocalyptic.
There is actually a narrative to this. It wasn't just some random anger. It was a lunchtime kickoff. Villa fans were in a really quite a good mood. There were a lot of them there. The press box... You know, we were ensconced inside the pack of travelling fans, which was kind of odd because it made the game unfold in a strange way in my head. But anyway.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They were joking, and it was people call it gallows humor, but it was good-natured. It was good-natured, and they were willing the team to win and willing them to play well. And they responded to early on Micah Richards sort of, you know, lifting his arms and saying, "Come on, give us some more noise." It was fine. And then slowly the game unfolded and Villa were not very good and clearly have massive confidence issues. And they started to sing nasty things and growl a lot and be ironic when they cheered anything. And then a few fans noticed, they said they noticed, I have no actual personal evidence of this, I did not see this, but some fans swear that they saw Brad Guzan and Julian Lescott playing chewing gum tennis or chewing gum, I don't know, touchline chewing gum, where you just see how far you can spit it out and how far it will reach the touchline. They were laughing and giggling about it while they were subs.
Can I ask a question about this, about yes. touchline chewing gum? Because obviously spinning contests are a popular activity. I'm sure we all did it when we were children. Basically, they would chew and then they would spit so you could get it further. Will they then
rush up and pick it up and then put it back in their mouth? No.
So they would get fresh chewing.
Yes.
They would get
that's
a fresh bit of chewing gum
that's
every time.
That's the allegation. Yes.
Seems
yes.
entirely wasteful.
There's a photograph on a website showing lots of chewing gum around the dugout. Which, if Sam Allardyce had been there, would look the same. I mean, some people chew a lot of gum and spit it out.
Yeah, no, but you're intentionally creating problem for the groundskeepers at Wickham. Is it Adams Park?
Yeah, that isn't what the fans were worried about, though.
Well,
they're worried about the demeanour of two senior players in the middle of a crisis for the club. And one fan was so cross, he went over to the dugout and said, "Why are you doing that?" And he claims he was told to F off. And then when Micah Richards was substituted, about 83rd minute, the fans were still there. And that is the reason why there was a Micah Richards fan interaction, because they said to Micah Richards, what the hell's going on?
You devil worry.
I don't know if Richards knew about the allegation about chewing gum. He said, "No, you know, please back us. We're in this together. We're trying." And I have no problem with him trying to calm a fan down and say that. But anyway, word spread. These fans are telling other fans, "Did you see what happened there? Or a disgrace there to the club." So they waited outside the players' exit. But Wickham's famous for having one road out of the stadium. And it gets log jammed on a normal day, let alone a cup tie day. So the Wickham stewards very kindly said to the Villa people, "Don't come out, you'll just be sat on the bus and there'll be a lot of aggro. It might be horrible because they sound quite angry." So they waited until the road cleared and then they got on the bus very quickly. And you're right, there was lots of identifying of each individual fan. But when Remy Gard got on, they saved the worst of the invective for him, you know. "And you, Gard, you know, you were the one behind this. You don't know what you're doing." And a few fans complained that it was getting a bit nasty and it was, you know, there were kids around. It was all a bit unpleasant. And they all drove off. Then we heard that Villa are having crisis talks about what they do. Do they fund to escape relegation or do they fund a life in the Championship? It's the first time, I don't go to every Remy Gard press conference, but it's the first time I am told that he really made it plain he's losing his patience with the players' attitude and performances. So they are a club in crisis.
All right, obviously there's several layers to that. We have talked about Villa's futility recently, but well, we know that there's a lot of gum on the ground. We don't know exactly what the context of Guzan and Lescott, what they were doing. But needless to say, Cass, it's important when your team's doing well, or sorry, doing badly, that you look suitably concerned, even when really you can't be bothered because it's not you on the pitch. And you could look at it as like, "Oh, look, I have more time to train and help keep Villa up." But whatever you shouldn't be doing is choking around and playing silly buggers with the chewing gum.
I mean, you're going to offend people. You're having a really rough season.
Have you seen that happen when you were playing?
Yeah, loads of times. Loads of people. Some players don't care if they don't care if the team loses and because they've been left out or, you know, well, for whatever reason. They're quite comfortable and just thinking, well, it's about me, not about the team. So, and Villa is quite clearly that. You feel that Agbonlahor's been there a long time. He feels his way going out the door and he hasn't been mentioned. But I just feel that there is that issue that they've got some players who have been there a while. They've had a lot of change personnel. I mean, you know, they lost huge numbers of players.
Yeah, but going by the specific argument about
players don't
looking
care.
The part.
Yeah,
well, no, players
you,
don't care.
Yeah, of course, there are some players. I wouldn't say them all, but there's some players who really don't care. Whether you know,
but they're also too stupid to understand that they need to look the part, at least, at least pretend like, oh, let's all make a serious face.
No, but the fact, Gab, I experienced
loads
of times. I mean,
Lescott and Guzan aren't kids. They're veterans.
No, they're experienced pros, but that doesn't...
So is there any way we might have taken this out of context and misinterpreted this, or did they just screw up?
Well, the club are talking to them today to find out their version of events. It may not be quite as bad as
they
the
haven't lost
thinks.
The game as well. Imagine how serious the Villa... They've drawn the game. They've got a replay, which under normal circumstances, okay, it might not have been the greatest result in the world, but fans would have been okay. They go, oh, we didn't play well today, but we've got a replay. There's a lot of things underlying at Villa where the fans have been... I was lucky enough to play for them, and I would say without a doubt they were the least aggressive fans at my time. Now, that's moved on a long time since I played for them. It's 1990. But Villa fans were quite an understanding group. I remember getting probably more backing from Villa fans than I did at any other club. They were really... And I always...
And you weren't that good for Villa relative to what
I
you did
at other
clubs.
I done all right.
You did better elsewhere, though.
Yeah, better. But I done all right by the time I left. But I found the fans. I was quite shocked. I'd left Millwall that, you know, I know that... Well, it will like to... I left Millwall. Now, I tell you, you really got it full on every time you played or, you know, wherever. Training ground, there'd be fans. I found Villa. I was, wow, this is a bit of a culture change to me. Mm. I had fans that were, you know... So don't worry, Tony. You know, I remember going and thinking, how friendly it would not be the case at Millwall.
But that holds now as well. They've been terrible. Villa fans have been terrible. Villa as a team have been terrible, sorry, for, 5 years? And the fans are still going, they're still getting 35,000. The fans have been extraordinarily patient with Villa.
For me, again, not growing up in this country, you look at the historic size of Villa's fan base, I would put Villa half a notch below the really big clubs like Liverpool and Manchester United in terms of catchment area success. And so I'm not necessarily surprised that 35,000, I mean, if Liverpool sucked as bad as Villa for 5 years, I would assume that there would still be 35,000.
Yeah, but if other teams did, then there wouldn't be 35,000. Yeah, no, it does to some extent reflect the size of the club. But I think Villa fans have generally been quite patient with a team that has been drifting for a long time.
Any other FA Cup takeaways that you might have, excluding things that we're going to deal with in quick hits? Anything you want to say about the FA Cup? Anything stuck out?
Well, Tony Cascarino is a messiah, and I saw him being a messiah.
I really enjoyed that piece that you did in Exeter. I thought it was brilliant, both of your pieces from Exeter.
Well, we both enjoyed. We went down, we had a really good time, and Paul Tisdale was, I thought, just very different. You just felt that quite a calm guy that talked about how the, you know, he changed teams on a regular basis, how he had to go through different changes at the football club, and openly admitted that he would not have walked into that club and done what he's doing now if it was a short-term appointment, or he felt it would have been. He would have played a different way because he needed to get results.
We sat down and spoke to Paul Tisdale, and there's no other manager who could speak like that because Wenger, being a Premier League manager, has a completely different remit. So Paul Tisdale, to stop himself getting bored, he recreates the team every 2 years?
Well, yeah, 18 months to 2 years he did it, didn't he?
I mean, because he wants to try out a different version of himself as a manager and the club as a club. Yeah.
For those of us who are less familiar with Paul Tisdale among our listeners, this is a guy who 5 or 6 years ago, I was assured, had a really bright future in football. He was one of the few sort of British managers who had a real potential to be in the Premier League. Can somebody fill me in on what went wrong since then? Or maybe he had no interest, I don't know.
I know Tiz a bit, and he's...
Tiz?
Tiz. He is one of my favourite people in football, is Tiz.
After Rafa.
In a different way to Rafa. Tiz is just he's just a brilliant bloke. He's a really genuinely good bloke. He has had offers. He won't go somewhere that he feels is a short-term thing. I think he feels very loyal to Exeter, and he feels that he has signed the contract there and he wants to fulfil that. He's an honourable man. He's also, I think, very settled in the South West. He doesn't live that near Exeter, but he's settled in that area, and he enjoys his work. I think he's still only, 42?
Yeah.
I don't think he'll finish his career at Exeter. I think he will move on, because there is a chronic shortage of money, and because after a while I think he will feel that the way to stop himself getting bored is to have another challenge. Without question, he is kind of the standard bearer for innovative, intelligent, different coaches that do crop up in the lower leagues. I've got a lot of time for Tisdale. I think he's a genuinely good coach.
Well, the fact that when he spoke and he talked about promotion and relegation as being something that's slightly overrated and it's not the basis of success for the football club, and that this club needed to, like they did with Grimes, they sold him for 1.7 million to Swansea, and he put a system together that could get the best out of this individual. You know, that I found that really interesting, that he said, well, we need to sell players, we're going to, you know, go on and exist for a long time, selling and buying and producing players is on our DNA, and that's quite hard to do, you know, to do what he did and the way they play as well. He's got a decent side there.
Yeah, some players.
It's an interesting theme because I look at George Culkin, as he often does, had a tremendous piece with Sam Allardyce, and has the added bonus that you
see him naked. Wow.
You don't see it. It's not full frontal, unfortunately. No, it's just his nipples. But he talks to Sam Allardyce where you know, in some ways, he's the epitome of a certain type of manager who gets sort of lampooned and pigeonholed in some ways, and I'm wondering if a guy like Tisdale looks at it and says, like, is it worth it?
Possibly. I think the one thing I would say, George's piece with Sam is brilliant, but the problem with Sam has always been his self-promotion. That's the issue. That's why people don't like Sam, because Sam will sit there and say, actually, I'm very innovative and very, very forward thinking.
Quick story about Sam.
Yes. All right.
Gillingham playing Millwall, 1984-5.
Set the scene. Just after the Audrey Miners strike.
Priestfield.
Sorry, can I just jump in one second? Younger listeners, Sam Allardyce used to have a mustache.
Yes.
And
he kind of still does.
I've been told by many people that he was what you call a big, ugly, nasty centre half.
So anyway, I'm standing in the tunnel and Sam Allardyce comes walking past me and he's in a white suit. Okay?
Nice.
He goes down the tunnel in a white suit. Now, bearing in mind, this is a League One game, but he was in a white suit. He goes onto the pitch, and I'm standing there. I was a young lad making a bit of a name for myself. I was about 20, around that age. And I'm just standing there, and obviously I'm going to be playing against him because he's a centre-half and I was a centre-forward. So he turns back, and he comes back down the tunnel, and he just looks at me and went, see you at 3 o'clock, and walked down the tunnel.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And I thought, ooh, that's quite intimidating. But we won 1-0 and I scored.
Did he kick you?
No, but Sam put himself about, yeah. Well, he kicked me, no. He put himself, he's a strong...
Hang on,
strong
is there not an alternative sort of interpretation of that story, which is that Tony Castorino is standing in a tunnel and sees a man dressed entirely in white go out of the tunnel?
Yeah,
were you in Gillingham or had you died and gone to heaven?
Could have been. That's true. That could very well be...
Quite intimidating when he done it, because he was obviously about 25 and big, strong centre-half, Sam.
Right, enough of that. On this FA Cup weekend, how about some quick hits? Chelsea beat Scunthorpe 2-0, and Goose Hiddink decides to play pretty much the entire first 11. Cass, was this the right decision, and does it suggest that they're showing the appropriate respect to the greatest cup competition in the world?
Absolutely, and I think bearing in mind that they got knocked out by Bradford last year in the manner they did, I think it was a competition that he'd look at and think, yeah, it's dreadful at the moment, we're at the wrong end of the table, and can we win the Champions League? Probably not, but I'm going to try and win a cup, and the FA Cup is the best opportunity.
Best opportunity to get into Europe as well, I think, at this stage. Tottenham Hotspur and Leicester City battle to a 2-2 draw, but Rory, was it really Spurs and Leicester given the zillions of changes? And does Spurs deserve that late equaliser and that Nathan Dyer handball?
It was a really harsh penalty. I think it was a correct penalty, but a very officious one. Alison, I'm sure her view would be much more relevant than mine. I thought
she's a qualified ref.
It was very harsh on Nathan Dyer. I don't think there's anything to do about it, but then it probably was a penalty. On the balance of play, yes, they deserved it. I think the most interesting thing was that Leicester's reserves could cope with Spurs' reserves, which suggests to me that Leicester's resources are deeper than they are given credit for.
Manchester City pummel Norwich 3-0 as Kelechi Iheanacho is picked ahead of Boney. We suggest in the paper Monday that he has supplanted Wilfried Boney as the second choice centre forward behind Kun Aguero. Alison, would this be a wise choice from Pellegrini? Is the kid ready?
No, the Boney situation fascinates me because all Pellegrini has succeeded in doing is wrecking Swansea. I know Boney wanted to leave. He said he wanted Champions League football. I mean, I don't mind him being ambitious, but it's not working for him at City. Sometimes a player goes from being the linchpin to being just one of many great players and it doesn't work for them. I would not say Boney hasn't tried very hard. He has. He's just not found that role in the team. And you probably do need to build the team around him. And there's no way Pellegrini's going to do that. I'm still a fan of Wilfried.
Sunderland's performance director, Mark Taylor, and this is a quote from George Culkin's excellent piece that you should go back to read, because for me, George Culkin is the best writer we have in the Times Sports Desk. You're all nodding along. He says, "We've developed our own performance app so that when the manager delivers a team talk, it can be uploaded and played as often as a player wants. We push them notifications. We know who's been watching it." Cass, I'm trying to work this out. So basically, in layman's language, I guess they tape Big Sam's team talks and then they make them available, kind of like on a YouTube.
Self-promoting.
And then whenever you need a pick-me-up, you push a button on your phone and Big Sam's face appears and you can watch Big Sam telling you, giving you a little thought for the day.
Yeah.
I don't know. This just seems bizarro to me. And were there any great managerial team talks that you wish you could play back from time to time when you need a little pick-me-up?
I'd say largely no. But I would certainly have had Jack Charlton on an app listening because they were funny. They were short and they were precise and you're exactly your role.
Were they allowed
to?
Not
really. Right. No, I wouldn't say no. He was a funny guy that made football very simple, and I would certainly listen to him and I could watch Jack over and over again.
You could call the app Snap Jack.
Honestly, if this works, I'm not going to knock anybody trying something new, but it just sounds like one of the silliest things I've heard of. Last week, after Rafa Benitez was sacked by Real Madrid, Rory, you wrote a story about how Gareth Bale could be considering his future because I guess he was really, really upset at Rafa being gone. Now that he scored a hat-trick in Real Madrid's 5-0 hammering of Deportivo Saturday and confirmed his status, as you know, he's the most headed goals of any player in Europe's big five leagues this season. Is everything fine and dandy? Does he have a new friend in Zizou?
So the story I wrote was that Gareth Bale was considering his future, and as far as I know, probably still is, because he was annoyed at Benitez going. They had a good relationship. He came out and said that after the game against Deportivo. He has been told by Zidane that he will be shown all the love he needs. But I think the crucial thing is probably where he will play. Bale wants to play centrally. I don't think he wants to be shoved out onto the left or right wing to accommodate Cristiano Ronaldo. And I think basically, as a lot of people have said in Spain for quite a long time, one of Bale and Ronaldo will leave Madrid this summer if they can, and if Perez has the nerve. I think it might be Ronaldo, and if it is, then I suspect Bale will stay.
Liverpool played Friday night and drew as Jurgen Klopp fielded a bunch of kids and guys I hadn't heard of as they drew 2-2 at Exeter. Alison, were you a bit disappointed in Jurgen's selection, especially given, yes, they have a midweek game, but this game was on Friday?
No, well, disappointed's the wrong word, I think. I mean, there are enough excuses and real reasons for it. I'd have rather, given all those excuses, that he'd fielded a team that was a team. Field the entire most successful play together a lot under 21 team. Don't try and throw Benteke in, who's never met them. I mean, that was a disappointed thing. Just go for a team that bears the Liverpool logo and they've played together and they've got an incentive because, heck, if they play well, they might play in the next round too.
Dab, one for you. We are at the halfway mark in faded Italian championship, Serie A, which, as we know, is very boring. I imagine there's been lots of 0-0 draws this season and no goals at all, and everyone's played very defensively. Who is top of the table and why?
In fact, somebody tweeted out, and I have no idea if this is true, but I will find out, that United have had more 0-0 draws this season than all of Serie A.
Serie A has loads of goals. It always has loads of goals.
It's a fascinating league. It's just so incredibly unpredictable because Napoli are top, to answer your question. They won 5-1 away to Frosinone, who are this delightful team that I would love somebody to write a feature of, Rory.
Only if there's a Premier League link.
Exactly. They play in a 9,000 seat stadium, and basically no matter who they play against, they just go all out attack. They score tons of goals, they concede tons of goals, they're not very good. Napoli beat them 5-1 to go top, and they went top because on Saturday Fiorentina somehow contrived to lose at home to Lazio. Lazio, the team, of course, of Manchester United potential target Felipe Anderson. And then on Saturday, Inter Milan, they went and led by the magnificent Adam Ljajic, who of course nearly signed for Manchester United and looks a little bit like Kaká. They totally pummeled Sassuolo, only to give up a foolish 93rd minute penalty given away by Miranda, who of course used to play for Atletico Madrid, who was managed by Diego Simeone, who once got David Beckham sent off in a World Cup. David Beckham, of course, used to play for Manchester United. I told you about Napoli winning 5-1. Napoli, of course, formerly managed by Rafa Benitez, who does not like Manchester United. And then on Sunday night, Juventus won 2-1 away to Sampdoria. And of course, that meant that they pulled even with Inter Milan. And of course, Juventus fielded Patrice Evra.
I have an interesting fact about Napoli's leading scorer, who is Gonzalo Higuain. Who once played against Manchester United. Who has 18 goals, I think, this season, which makes him the leading scorer in Europe.
I think that's more goals than Manchester United has scored last month.
He's level, I think, with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Higuain is a very difficult character. He's a little bit up and down. He is prone to bouts of massive losses of confidence. He had one, you might remember, before the World Cup final last year, which was a bit inconvenient. But the reason that Higuain is scoring so many goals, according to my friend... And I
is
don't
that
know if
Rafa's
this is true,
gone?
No, he's not. That
depresses him.
Is that Gonzalo Higuain's love life is going quite well, so he's now really happy off the field. And when he's happy off the field, he can score lots of goals on it, which I think is a lovely fact. Because for all the talk of analytics and coaching and scouting and all this stuff that we go really deep into all this stuff, ultimately they're human beings, and Gonzalo Higuain's happy and in love, which means he can score lots of goals.
There's a bounce in his step, and he's not at that happy in love stage where it becomes a distraction.
No, which is dangerous, and I think we've all been there.
But it is interesting, because I haven't made
enough... My match reports were terrible for a year.
Because I haven't made enough references to George Calkin's piece yet, they have this magic app at Sunderland, which sort of assesses everything about you and whether you're capable of training.
SoundChat.
They know more about you than you do. They know if you're getting a virus. I don't know how they track this. I think they
InstaSam.
A chip in the...
Yeah, InstaSam.
But I wonder
if
that's the next frontier, having the analytics guys sort of implant sensors and chips in players so that they can judge the value or they can judge what the player's getting out of his love life, thereby better assessing whether he's...
So, for example,
contributing.
Sam might go in to see Lee Catamol of a morning and say, look, Lee, we think you're having too much sex. You're not playing this weekend. That sort of thing.
I think that would be an entirely appropriate
thing. And to think, in the old days, all they did was tell players to get married at 21.
Yeah.
Probably because they didn't want them to have too much sex.
Exactly.
Sam going in and saying to Catamol's, Lee, it's the right amount of sex, but we're worried you're being a bit selfish.
It's the type of copulation that's just not working for us. He'll get them to download the Kama Sutra app to provide variety.
The Sama Sutra.
Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to my guests today, Rory K. Smith, Alison Rudd, and Tony Cascarino, and of course Sam Allardyce, who was with us in spirit. I think we're all big fans, and it's a great piece by George Culkin in The Times today.
Is it?
It's really,
okay.
Really good. You ought to read it. Please press that subscribe button. We'll be back next week. And remember, you can get exclusive football highlights for free as part of your subscription. It's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. Till next time, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.